My name is Jim. I'm an addict and alcoholic. And you did hear Rick right. It was 1988, not 1888. Nice body. Thank you. I grew up in central Wisconsin. Had two brothers, two sisters, and somewhat of a normal family life. We lived outside the city, in a little dinky city, but we were suburbanites, if you will. Didn't have a whole lot. And part of that reason is my dad was an alcoholic. And we were always in want. My brothers were older than I, and we'd pass the clothes on down, and I'd be obviously the third one in line to wear the same clothes. And I grew up absolutely hating my father. Sorry about that. Anyway, I grew up hating my father, and lo and behold, for being an alcoholic, and lo and behold, I not only grew up becoming an alcoholic like he, but all my relatives tell me I looked like my dad. So. God does have a sense of humor. Now, again, my childhood was pretty normal. We had a very loving family. Went to parochial grade school, and did quite well in school and athletics. And my first recognition of alcohol involved family gatherings, and the adults used to give us a sip of beer now and then, and laugh when we drank the beer. And I thought, God, this is a great way, to be recognized. If you drank some beer, it's a pretty funny thing. I never thought much more of that. Take that back. My brother and I, he was 2 years older than I, after we'd sip the beer, we'd pretend we were drunk. So it was pretty good training, for me. And later on, I never had to pretend. But the fact is, I was kind of enamored with alcohol at an incredibly young age. Grade school was grade school, did well in academics and athletics, had a lot of friends. Not much to say about that. When I got to high school, I think it was probably about my sophomore year, and I had skipped a grade, so I was only 15 years old, maybe. And the upperclassmen used to go out and buy a beer, and then we'd go out in the boondocks and drink some beer. And those days we were buying quarts of beer, so the big deal was if you could drink a quart, you were pretty cool. And right away it gave me acceptance, and I felt like I was somebody. Not a lot of consequences other than one morning we were about to go to church. It was a winter morning. And very, very cold. And my dad starts the car up, and we back out and headed to church. And my brother and I made one little mistake. We left a quart of beer underneath the front seat. And when that started thawing, the car just stunk. It was bad. But that was, kind of like minor consequences. And all my drinking in high school, I'll say never really had any major consequences for me. So I thought, alcohol is a good thing. Makes you feel good, makes you popular, breaks down the barriers. And so, not a bad deal. Well, I went to college and played football. Got into a fraternity, and involved a lot of parties and a lot of drinking. Started out somewhat slow, but pretty soon it was every weekend. It was totally binge drinking on weekends. And again, not a lot of terrible consequences, other than I'd start missing classes and the grades started dropping a little bit, to the point one year, at the end of the semester, I was notified that I could not come back and play football because my grades weren't up to par. And, you know, obviously I thought it was their mistake, wasn't mine, nothing to do with the alcohol or me. So I did go back to school, got my grades up, and the following year I started playing football again. But the drinking continued on. And one of the consequences that I never really hit me at the time, but I, as part of being on the football team, I was given a job at the local sports store. And they were really nice to me, you know, gave me great hours and stuff. But I had to buy beer, you know, so I started stealing. And it never really meant much to me back then, as it does today. But, you know, these guys that did me a big, big favor, all of a sudden I'm stealing from them. And I think they got to the point, they probably knew, but they never really did anything about it. So I felt they kind of got away with something. And somehow I graduated and got a job working in Milwaukee. And lived in a house with five other guys. And again, it was party on every weekend. And one of the weekends I went back home, and the girl I dated in college lived about 50 miles from my hometown. And I was out drinking all night and decided that it was a good time to go up and see her. And I had just bought, actually it was my first car I ever owned. It was a 1967 Cougar. It was brand new, and it was a 1967 actually. So I drive up to see her, and next thing I know, I'm sitting in a ditch, and there's a squad car, the county cop, and lo and behold, the deputy sheriff was a guy I went to college with. So he said, oh, let's get your ass out of the ditch, you know, and then go where you're going and I'll forget about it. So again, you know, yeah, my drinking probably caused me to go into the ditch, but on the other hand, I got away with it. The cop let me go. So all I did is just reinforced to me that drinking had no consequences for me. And you know, the drinking got more intense and so forth and so on. But I was truly a functional alcoholic. I had good jobs, a lot of friends. I forget about the lost relationships and distancing from my family because of my drinking and stuff, but that was then. I mean, I am aware of it today, obviously, but again, on and on it went. And finally, I met this very attractive girl from Chicago, and so we started dating. And one weekend she came up for the weekend and said, have you ever tried cocaine? And I go, no. But she says, well, you want to? I said, well, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not gonna be a prude. And I did try cocaine for the first time and was, you know, truly love at first sight. It gave me this incredible feeling. And I just, you know, I was hooked. And my cocaine use was, at that point, yeah, a little bit on weekends here and there. As you know the story. you know, all of a sudden it was every weekend. And then the weekend started on Thursday. And then on Monday, I had to do a few lines to take the edge off. And just on and on it went. To the point where I was keeping a stash in my desk at work. And, you know, every once in a while, I'd close my door, do some lines. And, you know, missing a lot of work, coming in late, and got to the point where my boss had a meeting with me and said my performance was such that if it didn't improve dramatically, I was going to get fired. Well, the way my mind worked, you know, it was the alcohol, nothing to do with the cocaine. So I decided, well, you know, maybe I should try cutting back on my alcohol. And I was engaged at the time and living with this girl, and we had some friends coming from out of town, this couple. And she said, you know, you always get drunk. Can tonight, possibly, can you just cool it a little bit? Just have two drinks, and that's it. I said, yeah, sure. So we went to dinner, and then went to the bar, and I did have two. You know, I had two scotches, I had two beers, I had two vodka. And the next morning, you know, she, you know, obviously was pissed off at me, and I, you know, it finally registered that God, once I started, I couldn't stop. And, you know, it is a problem. So I decided that it was time for me to stop drinking. And I did. Didn't go into any treatment programs. But I was still using cocaine. And she didn't know it. And the cocaine use wasn't as heavy as it had been, but it was still going on. You know, it's all I thought about all day long. And finally, one day I was at work, and she was at home, and she needed a pen. So she decided to go to my desk and find a pen. Well, there was a little added surprise for her. There was my stash of cocaine was in the desk. And then she was livid, obviously, and threatened me that she was going to leave if I didn't get into treatment. And so I then came to Dewey for outpatient treatment. You know, in my mind, you know, this place wasn't, you know, for me. I didn't really need this. You know, I already quit drinking. I mean, if I want to quit doing cocaine, I will. A piece of cake, you know? But one of the things we had to do as part of the treatment was to come to this Monday night meeting. And I would come to the meeting, and something that's pretty common, you know, I'd stay for the first half, and then when it was time to break out into groups, discussion groups, I'd get out of here, you know. But I'd usually stop and make a buy on the way home and use. And I kept going to these meetings because I had to. You know, I had to have my wife thinking that I was actually going to these long meetings. And one thing I did, though, I listened to people talk and learn a little bit about some of these people, their story. And all I did was compare myself to them. You know, that they were, oh God, they were much worse than I was. They used far more, they had much more devastating consequences. And I never realized that the truth of the matter was, morally and spiritually, I was as low as they were and then some. you know. But I only looked at, you know, like the monetary effects or whether they were incarcerated or what kind of trouble, whether they lost their house or job or whatever. So I kept rationalizing my use. And, my life was miserable. You know, I'm thinking, I'm in recovery and I feel like crap. You know, this program kind of sucks. And we started going to this church, and I really liked the pastor a lot. Really, really good guy. And just one day, I felt that I needed to talk with him. And so we met, and I told him all about me. I told him about my cocaine addiction and my problems and so forth and so on. And I'm supposed to be in a treatment program, but the fact of the matter is, you know, there's this God thing going on, and I can't imagine any God would forgive me for what I had done in the past. And it was a real turning point for me, because he just looked at me and said, you know, God doesn't care what you did yesterday. It's what you do today and tomorrow. And if you live your life striving to not commit those same sins of using and abusing cocaine and alcohol and people and so forth and so on, God will forgive you. And it really hit me, you know. Talk about spiritual awakenings. I left there, I felt different. I felt that maybe there was some hope, there was a chance that if I straightened my life out and changed, that God would forgive me and things would be fine. And I came back to these meetings with a completely different attitude. Instead of coming here thinking I didn't need to be here and that all these people were full of, you know what, I thought, you know, maybe I should start listening to what they're saying. And especially in those days, what they were quite good at, you didn't choose to do service work. You were told you're doing service work. You didn't choose to speak at a meeting. You were told you were going to speak at a meeting. And that really gave me a whole different attitude. You know, the good feeling I had when I could be of service to somebody else. It wasn't only about me anymore. Then I got a sponsor, and we started working the steps. And I used to say cocaine. You know, I was very angry at cocaine because, you know, it brought me down so fast. I think Sherry talked about it, a short period of usage. I only used about 3 years. And the last time that I actually used cocaine heavily was my 40th birthday. And my family had a big party for me at Giovanni's restaurant, if you remember that. And it was really nice and everything. But afterwards, I met all my coke friends. And we partied pretty much all night long. And I had a very important business meeting up in Oshkosh the next morning, which didn't faze me the night before. But that morning, I don't think I slept, but I had to go up to Oshkosh. And just outside of Oshkosh, my heart started just pounding. And the more I thought about it, the harder it pounded. And so I immediately went to the hospital and had a complete checkup and EKG and all that happy stuff. And the doctor says to me, "He's got it, you know, your heart's fine." He said, "You weren't using drugs, were you?" And I was, "Me? You know, you gotta be kidding me." You know, and that's the insanity of it. So I finally got to the point where I needed these meetings. I needed to make a good run at this recovery thing. And at the same time, my wife gave me a plaque that I have to this day. And I, by the garage, when I walk into my garage, I see it before I walk into my garage. And it says, "God, there's nothing that can happen today that you and I can't handle." And that was kind of my feeling from day one in honest recovery. That you know what, it's not me anymore against the cocaine. You know, I've got somebody with me all the time. And it just gave me so much hope and support to get me through the as far as I did. And a number of years ago, Rick started a meeting, a big book study meeting. And it was a very interesting meeting because it was people from all different addictions, men and women, all ages. And I think we were the only cocaine addicts in that meeting, I think, yeah. But they were gamblers and so forth, and so overeaters and so forth and so on. What this meeting did for me was that it taught me that, number one, that the 12 steps, as Bill W. called them, is they are a design for living. And it doesn't matter what your addiction is. If you live and breathe the 12 steps, you know, you can overcome any kind of addiction. And furthermore, the meeting was called Off the Wall Group, right? Yeah. Meaning that the 12 steps weren't just a bunch of damn words written on the wall. You know, you have to know what they mean, and you have to work them in your life every day. I should go back a little bit, but I first came into to the CA, my concept was as soon as I remembered, I could recite the 12 steps, then I was done with my recovery, then I'm okay now. That worked. But anyway, you know, that meeting has been a real epiphany for me, and it showed me very clearly that cocaine and alcohol were not my problems at all. You know, I was the problem. You know, if it wouldn't have been cocaine and alcohol, it would have been some other drug or some other addiction. That if I'm going to get healthy and stay healthy and grow spiritually, then I've got to work on the most important things, and that those were my character defects. And I worked those very hard. One of the things I did is I went back to my life before alcohol and cocaine and just took a look at myself, what kind of person I was. You know, and it was clear to me that those character defects were present back then. I acted on those character defects. So, you know, all the cocaine and alcohol did was gave me an opportunity to numb myself. I mean, the whole idea of me wanting to please other people and be part of the crowd and liked by everybody, you know, it's part of all those character defects. You know, my life today, I am very grateful to God for giving me the chance to live. And actually for introducing me to cocaine, frankly, because I feel like I've been reborn. I finally got to understand myself, who I was, what I was, what made me happy. I always, you know, to me, fame and fortune. I mean, I wanted money, and I wanted everybody to know me and like me. And I learned that that's not the end all and be all. That I want something greater than that. I want to do things for other people. I want to be of service to people. And just the other day, you know, the Whitney Houston thing, I thought, yeah, there's your answer. If you think if I just had more money, everything would be different for me. But, I mean, look at Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson, whether it's suicide or overdose, whatever you want to call it. But that's obviously not the answer. My daily life is, first thing I do in the morning is I pray. Ask God to help me stay clean and sober. I get an email, AA email, with thoughts for the day and prayers for the day and those things. Try to read a little bit of the big book or some other literature. And you know, at the end of the day, I get on my knees to pray and review my day, you know, decide whether I need to make amends to anybody or not. And you know, I do that without fail. The other thing, you know, I just recently have retired after spending 45 years in my profession, you know, the profession that I was about to be fired from because of cocaine use. And you know, interestingly, when I told the president I wanted to retire, and he tried to talk me out of it. You know, 25 years ago, people couldn't wait for my ass to get out of the door, you know. So what a change. In addition, you know, back in my using days, you know, I couldn't be trusted farther than you could throw me. And a couple weeks ago, I was just voted president of my church council. Wow, you know, what a change in your life. You know, everything I have, I owe to my higher power and this CA recovery program. It's just given me so much happiness and joy in my life. And I hope all of you get to experience the same thing I do on a daily basis. I'm sure you do, but it's a miracle. It's a miracle where I'm at and the kind of life I have right now. So thank you very much for listening, and have another 24.